well, in the absence of any scheduled topic, which is happens on occasion, on the rare occasion here. I'm just going to read a little from Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is from 7th canto. Srimad Bhagavatam has 12 cantos, and the main bulk of the text is in the 10th canto. And of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is the main spiritual text delineating the process of devotional service. Bhagavad Gita gives the need for surrender to Krishna and devotional service, and then Bhagavad Gita shows how to practice that. And of course, it's, you see all of these beautiful little dioramas around, and these all depict different incarnations of Krishna that are all mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam and their pastimes. And one of them is Orna Shankadev over there in the 7th canto. He's described somehow or another. Orna Shankadev, he always takes a very prominent place in our temples, in our books, in courtrooms, and so on, just to explain to people how family-friendly Krishna consciousness is, and how children pray when their parents are ripped to pieces. Of course, if it happened to be like Hiranyakashipu. And I won't go into that pastime today. It's a wonderful pastime, and it's extremely long. It takes the better part of the 7th canto. And of course, there's two main characters. If you put Hiranyakashipu aside, he's also the main character, but which is Lord Nrisimhadeva and Prahlad Maharaj. And Lord Nrisimhadeva is God, Prahlad Maharaj is the devotee, and of the two, of course, the devotee takes a more prominent position by the Lord's grace. And Narada Muni describes this lila to Yudhisthira Maharaj in Yudhisthira Maharaj's court. And the basic subject being, how is it that Krishna's equipoise to everyone, to demons and devotees? And then by this picture you can see how Krishna's equipoise to everybody. In brief, he gives this pastime to illustrate it, but Krishna is equal to everyone in that whatever way they approach him, Krishna reciprocates proportionately. So if someone approaches him as an enemy, then Krishna reciprocates with him as an enemy. And if someone approaches him with love, then Krishna reciprocates with him with love. And of course, Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj represent these two real poles of relationship with the Lord. There's a verse that's mentioned both by Shukadeva Goswami and also by Narada, very similar. Well, how is it that they equally benefit? The absorption that Hiranyakashipu had was the same as the absorption that Prahlad Maharaj had. But Prahlad Maharaj's absorption was in devotion, and Hiranyakashipu's absorption in Lord Nrisimhadev was that of one of being inimical towards him. But because of that absorption, particularly at the time of death, they were both liberated. Anyway, once that story is finished, and Prahlad Maharaj is really the example of unlimited tolerance, because he really tolerates a lot before from his father, before Hiranyakashipu meets this end. And Yudhisthira Maharaj then asks, well, how does someone become such a perfect person? And he's the ruler of the earth now. Kurukshetra battle is over. So he wants to know, what type of social structure can I establish on this planet that will make people be like Prahlad Maharaj? And so in the rest of the seventh canto, which in six chapters, or five chapters, then Narada Muni explains the Varnashram social system. And this is the most extensive description of Varnashram found in Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna, of course, mentions it in Bhagavad Gita in different places, in the fourth chapter, in the 18th chapter, and he talks about it somewhat in the 14th chapter indirectly. But here we find a very concise, actually more detailed and very precise description of social orders, spiritual orders, duties of different classes of people, of men, of women, their rights, their obligations. I can't go through it all, but Yudhisthira Maharaj is inquiring from Narada Muni, and then Narada Muni says, well, I'll tell you the answer as to what the perfect social structure is, what I heard actually from Narada Muni. And he says that this is the principle of Dharma Mula, He Bhagavan. It is the root of religious principles. Very interesting. And then he says what the result of this type of social structure is. And I'm not really going to talk about it very much because we don't really have that much time. But I'm just going to read what its purpose is, what it's meant to invoke in human beings. Because the whole idea was, Yudhisthira Maharaj's idea is everyone in the world should be like Prahlad Maharaj. And then and we wouldn't have any Hiranyakashipus. Instead, most everyone is like Hiranyakashipu, and therefore we don't have any Prahlad Maharajas. So he says, what is the basis, or what is the result of following this social structure? He says, on the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. So the purpose or the result, the end result of a proper social structure is that people are happy in mind, they're spiritually happy, and their senses are satisfied. And that's not what goes on in the world today. People are neither happy in mind, they're never satisfied, and as far as soul is concerned, they don't even believe in it, what to speak of being happy. And what are the qualities that a social structure is meant to bring out in people? In other words, what are good people? That's the first thing that Narada Muni describes. He says, these are the general principles to be followed by all human beings. Okay, so check off the list. There's 30. Truthfulness, mercy, austerity, which Prabhupada defines as observing fasts on certain days of the month, bathing twice a day, tolerance, discrimination between right and wrong, control of the mind, control of the senses, nonviolence, celibacy, charity, reading of scripture, simplicity, satisfaction, rendering service to saintly persons, gradually taking leave of unnecessary engagements, observing the futility of the unnecessary activities of human society, remaining silent and grave and avoiding unnecessary talk, considering whether one is the body or the soul, distributing food equally to all living entities, both men and animals, Prabhupada writes, seeing every soul, especially in the human form, as part of the Supreme Lord, hearing about the activities and instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of saintly persons, chanting about these activities and instructions, always remembering these activities and instructions, trying to render service, performing worship, offering obeisances, becoming a servant, becoming a friend, and surrendering one's whole self. O King Yudhisthira, these 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. Simply by acquiring these qualifications, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Narada Muni is going to talk about different orders of society and the rights of obligations, the different statuses of life one through which one passes through, and also Brahmins, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or intellectuals, administrative laborers, and mercantile community. But he starts off by saying what has to be common to all of them. So he says everyone. He starts off by all human beings, and he ends up at the saying is this must be acquired in the human form of life. So everyone has this. Then there may be more or less of different qualities, or one may be practicing or inspired more by one certain activity, one certain quality than another, but all of these things must be acquired. Now, if we study our present society is not principle-based. It's not based on who you are. Because Narada Muni starting, he's not saying that you've got to be successful in life. He's not saying that you have to have a diploma. He's not saying that you have to be rich. He doesn't say that you have to have a big house. He's saying you have to acquire these qualities. In other words, you have to be a perfect person. So he's starting off with what the principle is, who people should be, not what they should be. Because our present society is what you should be. You can be a lawyer, a computer technician, an engineer, a doctor. That's what they ask you. What are you going to be? Not who are you going to be. No, I ask you who are you going to be. This is what are you going to be. And if you're a successful this, that, or whatever, then it doesn't really matter who you are. This, do we consider that the leaders of society are ideal people? No, because we've just surrendered to the fact that it doesn't work like that. So it's a different paradigm shift. It's not based on economic development. It's not based on being a successful achiever, at least not in terms of the things that you accumulate. In fact, it just says the other over here, gradually taking leave of unnecessary engagement, observing the futility of unnecessary activities. It just talks about just the other, is that ultimately one should become detached from all of these things. So we'll just go through some of these because we don't have won't have time to go in depth through all 30 qualities, but it's something to consider and something to meditate on, that the important thing in us as individuals, because in terms of a society, we are just individually building blocks of a society. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, the important thing is, what does society make people into? And if it makes them into good people who have these qualities, then it's successful. And tick off which of these qualities. Now, one thing is we're personally interested in or cultivating, but which of these are actually emphasized of any priority in modern society? Is truthfulness, do you think a politician tells the truth? Do you think a businessman tells the truth? Does anyone tell the truth? Do you think your professors tell you the truth? that everything came from an explosion, or that your great-grandfather was an ape. You think your great-grandfather was a monkey? No, it's all a lie. So it's all, no one's telling the truth, but here we're talking about truthfulness. And it's interesting that it starts off with truthfulness, because if you want good people, even today people recognize, yes, you should tell the truth. Mercy, to be merciful. Anyway, we're surrounded on this side, what are they called?
State by night.
Not a very merciful part of Swansea. Austerity. In other words, that we should live by the basic necessities of life. Not have as much as possible, but live by the basic necessities of life. Bathing twice a day. Interesting that it's only twice a day. I guess this is for everybody, because Brahmins are supposed to bathe three times a day. And when I first came to Krishna consciousness, and that was before I joined the temple, and my mother found out that I was bathing three times a day. Once when I happened to visit at home, she invited a doctor. Because he happened to be there. So she asked him, don't you think it's going to be unhealthy if he's bathing three times a day? And he just laughed. He says, no, I don't think it's a serious health crisis. My father-in-law phoned up the psychiatrist because I told him that I was a vegetarian. I don't know what the psychiatrist said, but tolerance, to be tolerant, that discriminate between right and wrong. Of course, we do discriminate, but what's right and what's wrong? What we think is what's right and what's wrong? Or, you know, in this country, how long ago was that? Well, over a century ago, Oscar Wilde was in jail for being a homosexual. No one's being put into jail for being homosexual nowadays. What to speak of getting married or adopting children as homosexuals. What's right? What's wrong? The law determines what's right or wrong, or the deterioration of values eventually determines what's right or wrong. So know what's right or wrong is one thing. To be able to discriminate between two things, that's fine, but to actually accept absolute values, not just relative values. Controlling the mind. The main health problem of this century that we're in, according to the World Health Organization, is mental problems, emotional and mental problems. More than cancer, more than heart problems, more than Ebola, is mental disturbance. And they say up to 80% of people to one degree or another. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So 4 out of 5. Don't ask to recognize.
Yes. I think I'm going to know the
answer. Control of the mind. Because unless you actually practice mind control, your mind will kill you, literally speaking. It will torture you to death. And as much as people suffer due to this body, they suffer very, very intensely due to the mind. The difference is that, you know, the body, well, yeah, the body has its limits. The mind doesn't seem to have any limit. 24 hours a day, it goes without any rest. But controlling the mind, and ultimately that's what yoga is about. Krishna says yoga, indriya, samyamya. Yoga means to control the mind and the senses. Control of the senses. And in connection with controlling the senses, non-violence. So obviously there's no stake by night in a non-violent society. As well as so many other things. Celibacy. That's another thing that people call the doctor on the arm. And there's something wrong with you if you're celibate for the last 45 years. So, but no, that's something that's obvious. And what to speak of that people take lifelong vows of celibacy, but that actually society is structured in such a way that all boys, all girls are celibate until the time they get married. That doesn't exist anymore. Even when I was young, it was supposed to be sort of the turning point at that time in the 60s. Charity, not bad. There's charity, but not necessarily for the right cause. Krishna talks about the right type of charity. I remember once visiting one very wealthy person, and he was asking, he says, "Maharaj, I want to donate money, but I don't know who to give to." So you're asking me a question like that. He says, no, I mean, if I give to Krishna consciousness, no one will take me seriously. But if I build hospitals, if I, you know, feed the poor, and if I do things like that, then I'll, you know, that will help my sort of name, fame, my position in society. So although people do give in charity, and in America, Americans give either $60 or $600 billion a year in charity. So quite charitable people. But not necessarily all the charity goes in the right place. I don't know, false teeth for dogs or things like that. They got all kinds of charities for so many things. The reading of scripture, well, we're trying to convince our devotees of that also. And it's something that needs to be emphasized, that yes, we do read scripture. Why? Because scripture is what we base our life on. To know what's right and wrong, you have to read scripture. Simplicity, and the opposite of that is avoiding not being duplicitous. So simplicity is something that's straightforward, and one is satisfied with the basic necessities of life, which is, you know, in the last 10 years, 15 years at most, sort of sustainability has become like a real catchword, and they want, you know, especially, well, it's not just Western, but sort of the developed and the developing world really want sustainable development, which is, you know, like having a good year on Yakashipu or something like that, sustainable development. As if development is something that is in itself sustainable. But development is not sustainable. Development is another word for greed. Is that I should have more, and we should keep having more and more and more, and it should be sustainable. But it's not. It's not sustainable. So what is sustainable? Sustainable is that if we all decided to live more or less at about a third of our present maintenance level, and that would be sustainable for everyone on the planet. But as long as we insist on living the way we're living, there are going to be people starving all over the world, and it doesn't matter what you do, because there just isn't enough resources.